McNeil, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993, Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, April the 30th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. Three U.S. Marshals Task Force officers were killed and four Charlotte Mecklenburg police officers were hurt, one critically, during an East Charlotte shootout, which stemmed from a fugitive warrant operation on Monday afternoon. That from WBTV. They report as the U.S. Marshals Task Force attempted to serve the warrant for possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, they were met with gunfire from inside a home and officers returned fire. They struck the suspect, and that person was pronounced deceased in the front yard. And cities and towns across Massachusetts hope to increase young voter turnout in local elections by lowering the voting age to 16 or 17.
Somerville, Northampton, Southborough, and Concord are just a few of the municipalities which have attempted but failed to secure state approval. State Senator Becky Rausch says allowing young people to vote on local matters helps ensure they'll keep voting throughout their lives.
That voting power fosters a real sense of civic duty and does, in fact, encourage higher turnout rates among young adults.
Opponents contend teenagers lack the ability or motivation to fully understand what's at stake in an election. But Rausch points to Tacoma Park, Maryland, where the turnout rate for 16 and 17-year-olds exceeded that of any other age group for the first election in which they were allowed to vote. I'm Catherine Carley reporting.
The effort is part of civic education, which was solidified as a centerpiece of K-12 education in Massachusetts back in 2018, and which received a significant funding boost from the state legislature this past year. Next to Missouri, where residents are gaining new insights into the powerful role of food in health care, as experts and organizations advocate for a shift toward food as medicine initiatives.
Assistant Professor Kelsey Gardner at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, emphasizes the critical link between access to healthy food and improved health outcomes. She notes that individuals facing food insecurity often experience higher rates of chronic diseases, highlighting the urgent need for systemic changes to enhance food access.
There are things that we can do, and there are certain shifts nationally that are happening, whether that be through policy or through infrastructure changes. And we can be doing more in the state of Missouri in order to help increase access to healthy food that can directly tie into better health outcomes.
Gardner underscores the potential of food as medicine interventions in preventing chronic conditions and reducing healthcare costs. She says recent studies show that such interventions can lead to $13.6 billion over 1 year in cost savings and several improved health outcomes, making them a valuable addition to healthcare strategies. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
This is Public News Service. Big players in the beef and poultry industry now face pressure to prepare for a new federal rule for product of USA labels. Advocates for smaller farmers and ranchers see an opportunity for these operations to reach more customers.
Companies selling meat products in grocery stores have until early 2026 to comply with the USDA rule announced this spring. Product of USA labels are sometimes slapped on a meat item for sale. Firms that outsource production overseas have been doing it because the item was packaged in the U.S. But now all of the animal production has to be done domestically to use the label. North Dakota Farmers Union President Mark Watney likes the move.
In some respect, it should give a U.S. producer a distinctive advantage to the consumer that desires a product that is born, raised, slaughtered, processed in the U.S.
While the rule is binding, use of the label is voluntary. Watney says advocates still have a long way to go in getting stronger mandates under country of origin labeling. Critics of such moves worry about disrupting international markets. I'm Mike Moen.
And New Mexico is taking a deep dive into its funding of public colleges and universities to determine if inequities need to be addressed.
The Higher Education Sustainability Study will review and recommend changes to the formula used to fund higher ed. Gerald Honey with the New Mexico Higher Education Department says it will look at possible inequities among the full range of sectors, from colleges and universities to research institutions, independent community colleges, and branch campuses.
The differences between community colleges and research institutions, those differences have come into how they're funded. So this study gives us an opportunity to look at that in more detail.
I'm Roz Brown.
The National Center for Higher Education Management Systems is conducting the equality study on behalf of the state. Finally, our Nadia Ramlagan lets us know the Blackwater River, which flows more than 30 miles through West Virginia's Allegheny Mountains, ranks among the top 10 most endangered rivers in the nation. That's according to a new report.
Judy Rod with the group Friends of Blackwater says Corridor H would involve building a bridge in an area honeycombed with old mines, and explains the construction could compromise decades-old work to actively treat the water in the North Fork of the Blackwater impacted by acid mine drainage. She's worried the highway could be a major environmental setback for the region.
We expect in the next year to really clean up this river and bring back a trout fishery that used to be there. However, if they start building this bridge, they could be opening up old coal mines, old tunnels, which are filled with acid pollution.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, April 30th. Local early morning temperatures range from 48 degrees in Medusa to 58 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 53 degrees. Root growth is now optimal. Pollen levels for today have been beaten down into low territory. The morning will be dry, but rain enters the area at 4 p.m. By then, though, we'll see the day's high of 62 happen at 2 p.m. Things could get stormy. Rain ends after midnight. We'll get a low temperature of 54 degrees. Then a dry Wednesday with a high of 68, lingering most of the afternoon. Skies will be partly cloudy. 52 degrees overnight takes us into a mostly sunny Thursday with a high of 73. Friday will be dry and cloudy with a high of 69. All right. Tide schedule for today is high tide 8 a.m., low tide at 3:12 p.m., and then high tide once again at 8:54 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 55 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:38 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:47 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 385 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 88. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Turn out for Wayfarms WGXE 90.7 FM's karaoke contest fundraiser at Half Moon in Hudson on Friday, May 10th. The evening will be hosted by karaoke Amanda of WGXE show Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda.
I'm trying to get the people saying, be quick. Be quick.
Really?
Here's a beat I can't resist. So let's get up and dance the American Eagle. Two or three small eggs are laid in a nest, which an eagle made. Eagle eggs in our American nation spend 35 days in incubation. The eagle parents take turnabout, keeping eggs warm until the chicks hatch out. Now the kids are small for the first several weeks, and the parents pop food into their beaks. And if an eagle would make a wish for a treat to eat, it would want a fish. When a fish is caught, it's an eagle convention. The parents divide it and the kids pay attention. But later on, when a fish is caught, the kids divide it up like they were taught. Sticks and branches are eagle toys. Holding on is taught there, girls and boys. They pluck baby feathers as new ones show up. They keep on a plucking as they grow up. Ma and Pa teach many things, like jumping up and down and flapping their wings. Eagle kids flap and jump and cry, and after weeks of practice, they're ready to fly. But if they won't fly out of that nest, Papa keeps their food until they pass the test. At the age of one, the kids leave home to make their way in the world alone. And after a 4 or 5 year wait, they settle down with a lifetime mate. Together they sleep and hunt and eat and fly as high as 10,000 feet. On a clear and cloudless summer day, they can spot a fish 3 miles away. When they build nests, they build heavy ones, some as heavy as 1 or 2 tons. Let's hope the eagle is here to stay as the emblem of the U.S. of A.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC. This program is Frequency, Meet Bird People in Hudson Valley, and my name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a free-form mix of sound made by birds and humans inspired by birds. We started today's show with a song titled The American Eagle by Bruce Hark, which I believe he's not American. I thought he was Canadian. And I believe when he says the American Eagle, it probably means the bald eagle. Anyhow, the track was from his 1973 released album, Captain and Entropy, and as you heard, it was a song about eagles' chicks growing up, and I'm not entirely sure if it's accurate ornithologically speaking, but it kind of fits the mood of the story that we're going to hear today from today's guest, Justin Schmidt. Justin is a wildlife photographer and a Red Hook resident, and he has been documenting a family of peregrine falcon nesting on the local bridge in Dutchess County. And he has put numerous photographs of them that he took last year into this one beautiful book titled Trestle Peregrines. And so it's not eagle chicks, but, you know, raptor children, anyhow. And in this interview, he shares the challenges that falcon chicks faced, Justin's experience of working with local rehabbers, and the joy of taking time to slow down and observe all the creatures around us while respecting boundaries. So, without further ado, let's listen to my interview with Justin. Thank you for tuning in. This is Frequency on Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. Well, thank you for taking time to speak with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
Can you briefly introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Justin Schmidt, and I am a wildlife photographer, not by profession, but just interest.
Well, professional level of the work that
I'm looking at
is pretty incredible. And you're originally from New Jersey.
Yep.
But now you're local.
Yes.
In Dutchess County?
Correct. I lived in Rhinebeck, and now I'm currently in Red Hook, New York.
So how did your interest in wildlife begin?
That's a good question. Being young, growing up as a kid, I used to spend a lot of time outdoors on camping trips and whatnot, and I was just always fascinated with the outdoor world and all the creatures that were surrounding me, whether it be frogs, or I used to fish a lot, so I used to see a lot of stuff fishing. Eventually, I just got into all sorts of wildlife, but birds in general are, you know, the most abundant around here, so it's just easier to focus my time on birds, but I photograph all types of wildlife currently.
Including foxes.
Foxes, bobcats, bobcats, coyotes. I like all the things that you don't get to see often because either people are asleep or they just come out and they're more active at night. But if you wake up early enough or you go out right around dusk, you might get lucky and see them occasionally. And those are my favorite times to photograph, so I don't sleep much.
I was wondering.
I'm out very early and I stay out very late.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because when I see your, well, first I saw your work on Instagram and I was thinking, okay, so all these things that you're photographing, they're all around me. They live in my neighborhood and I don't get to see them because I'm terrible at waking up early. Even though being a birder, that's truly a challenge for me. But it is kind of amazing to realize that they're here.
Yeah.
I'm just not trained or prepared or working hard enough to see them. But if you are willing, you have all these amazing diversity around you.
If you do your research, you know, like just through observation, and then if I see something that interests me, I'll always research it and find out more about it. So through sight and observation and then a little bit of research, you can pick up on their habits or when the best time it is you'll see them, or like currently right now is fox kit season. So if you're lucky enough to find a den and you're respectful enough and keep your distance and the parents realize you're not a threat, of course, they're going to be a little wary and they're going to keep their eye on you the whole time. But like I said, if you keep your distance and you're respectful and quiet and don't get in their way, they usually will accept you for the most part. And you can watch them raise their kids to adulthood, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's also for this project, I guess I can call it, the one peregrine falcon's family that you followed through
Just last year, or when did it
exactly? Yeah, just last year I was...
So you came upon them last year.
Yeah, well, actually a friend is the one who mentioned them to me, and I just decided one day when things were slow elsewhere, I was photographing and there wasn't much happening, so I figured I'd go check out the location that he had mentioned them. And as soon as I got there, one was flying around, and I said, oh, wow, this is going to be fun. Falcons are one of my favorite birds. So, again, same thing with the being respectful and keeping your distance. I used those same principles with these guys and realized that they were going to be nesting here and that it's a residential pair that's been there for a few years. And, I got to watch them raise a family of four little chicks and got to see them grow up, and just an amazing thing just to watch how caring the parents are. And I know falcons are known, I mean any wildlife is known to look like killers when they're bringing in food and whatnot, but to see the other side of them is really amazing how caring they are to their young. Really cool.
You must have started shooting in like February. When did they start building nests?
This year I started a little earlier because I knew that they were going to be there. But last year, I would say was probably the first or second week in April.
Okay.
And then from April till August, when the last one fledged, was the time period I spent with them. So for about 5 months, close to 6 months, I was photographing them on my days off of work. Not every day, but on my days off of work.
So there are many challenges that you documented in this book also, but for birds to raise their chicks, you know, they keep losing their chicks for all sorts of threats from outside, like predators. And you mentioned the traffic accident because they live on the bridge and there's some traffic. And so could you tell us how it went for this falcon family you followed? And
Well, first off, there was four of them. So I got to see four chicks in there. But from my almost six months of observing, I only witnessed one fully fledge from the area and go off with its parents. So that means three of them, there was problems. I'll start with the one that I don't know what happened to it. It just mysteriously disappeared. We don't know if it was hit by the passing train. We don't know if a predator got it. Kind of just disappeared mysteriously. The other two, one of them was one of them upon fledging, and if no one knows what fledging means, it's when they leave the nest site and take flight for the first time. So when that happened, one of them ended up crash landing down into a pretty busy road that the bridge overpasses, and luckily there was people working outside that day and saw this happen. And right before we got there, they had told us they rescued the bird, got hold of a rehabber, and their buddy that works for them was going to drive it up to the rehabber. I kept in contact with that rehabber as much as possible to find out if the bird was successfully released, but they stopped contacting me, so I do not know if it ever was released or not. And then the last bird was the one that I rescued. I watched it that day jump from the bridge, or jump from its nesting site, took flight, and then out of nowhere, about 45 minutes later, I would say, I watched it from the bridge crash land into the creek below the bridge. This was basically the worst thing possible that could have happened. And of course, it happened the day that I was there. Luckily, it did happen while the day that I was there, because if no one else was around, the bird probably wouldn't have been rescued. So I actually started taking my socks and my pants off, and I was actually going to jump in the creek and swim out there. But then I realized where I'm photographing is a boating and a kayaking rental center. So I asked the owner if I could just quickly borrow a kayak and kayak out. And I explained to him the situation of what had just happened and that I didn't have much time. So he was more than generous enough, let me pull out the kayak for me and let me get in the kayak. And I just made my way out to the bird. And with the paddle, the oars, I gently kind of just put the oar underneath the falcon and scooped it up out of the water and placed it into the kayak and was able to safely grab its talons so that it wouldn't go crazy flying all over the place or trying to fly. And I was able to successfully get it back to land and get it to a local rehabilitator that I knew in the area. That one, unfortunately, had a broken femur. Upon inspection, I had a broken femur bone. She sent me the x-ray where she brings her birds. Her local vet gave her the x-ray and showed where the break was. And it was scheduled for surgery, and it successfully got through the surgery to fix the femur bone. But then shortly afterwards, it passed away. So unfortunately, that one was never released. So again, one of them mysteriously disappeared. Two of them ended up at rehabilitators, one of which I don't know was ever released. And one of them was successfully raised by the parents till it was out on its own.
You're listening to Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC 90.7 FM. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Justin Schmidt, a wildlife photographer and Red Hook resident. We are listening to stories of a family of peregrine falcon nesting on the local bridge in Dutchess County that Justin has been documenting.
You casually mentioned that you went on canoe and just in this photo, you have the bird in your hand. And the bird looks calm, too.
What?
How do you know how to handle, like, raptor? I don't think I could do this, like, just pick it up.
Well, it's always a little risky, especially when you don't have gloves.
Yeah,
because
they
have razor-sharp talons.
Yeah.
But just through sight and observation at some events where the rehabilitator that I brought my bird to does local events for children, you know, to raise awareness for different species of birds and everything,
mm-hmm.
for her non-releasable birds. And just through observation on how she picks them up and handles them, I kind of had a basic idea of where to grab them so that they wouldn't be able to use their feet and their talons to cause damage to me.
That's a great information, because I wouldn't know. You look as if you've been trained to do this. I mean, in this photo, I don't know, maybe outside this photo, there might have been a lot of panic going on. But as far as I can tell from the photos, looks as if you've been trained to handle birds. So people can participate in such events. They can get some ideas of when they encounter a situation like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's always recommended, if possible, to call your local rehabber first and just have them come out and successfully deal with it on their own, because they're trained. But mm-hmm. in this instance, this bird was kind of in the middle of a creek,
mm-hmm.
and it was doing its best to stay afloat by flapping its wings, and it made its way out to one of the structural pillars that the bridge, you know, relies on. But from there, it was having trouble grasping onto anything or even climbing up out of the water. So again, it was more of a time situation, and I kind of just used my best judgment and got out there as quickly as possible to get the bird safely back to land, and
right.
helped out by a professional who deals with these instances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm glad you happen to have this kayak rental company right
yeah.
near.
Yeah, it was truly, truly a blessing that they were open and running that day, and mm-hmm. that he was willing to just let me hop into a kayak and go out and grab the bird.
Mm-hmm. They even give you the matching color kayak that you dressed in blue shirt and jeans, and they give you the blue kayak. It's very, you know, aesthetically speaking, this is a great page also. Oh, do you mind telling me the name of the rehabbers that you work with?
Oh, yeah. Her name is Annie Mardini, and mm-hmm. she her company is called Wild Mountain Birds, and she's located in Rosendale, New York.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So people can find their information on the...
Yeah,
they have a website or something?
Yeah, she has a Facebook page, and yeah, she's always doing good things for these birds, and it's... all money out of her pocket, so she's always open for any kind of monetary donations to help her out, because although she's retired now, she has the time to do it. New York does not fund any rehabilitation, so if anyone who's a rehabber in New York State, it's all money out of their pockets. So any bit of help is always helpful for these guys, because they're doing great things to get these birds back out into the wild.
What was the most joyful part of this whole process?
Most joyful part? Well, like I said, they are one of my favorite birds of prey. I mean, it's the fastest animal on the planet, and for me to be able to witness one and see a family in action right here where I live is awesome. But more so, it's always a learning experience, just through observation and photographing them, just to again to see how caring they are towards their kids, and how protective they are of their space. Anything that was passing through, they would let them know that this is their area, and they would run them right out of the area. One day I was in the wrong area for photographing it, but there was an eagle flying up the creek, and don't matter the size of the bird, they'll go after it. They're very determined, and they're very not scared of anything three times their size. And she chased that eagle and pushed it right into a tree, forced it to perch in a tree across the creek, and it's just mind-blowing to see their power and their agility and their speed. Just a really fun bird to observe. And also amazing that they just adapt to almost any kind of environment. They're found all over the world, but more recently they're adapting very well to cityscapes. New York City's loaded with peregrines. All the major bridges from Albany down to New York City usually have nesting pairs on them now. So
right.
It's just amazing that they adapt. And
there was a news about the family and Rip Van Winkle Bridge.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah, the Kingston Rhinecliff Bridge as well also has a nesting pair on their bridge. The Mid-Hudson Bridge in Poughkeepsie has a pair. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I actually
met the guy who checks all the nests on the bridge earlier this year in New Paltz. He was doing a release of two juveniles that were brought to rehabbers, and he released them over in New Paltz, and he got to talking about how he goes up on all the major bridges and does nest checks and does the banding of them and all that. And that was really interesting to find out his work. Something I would love to do. Obviously, I'm not trained to be climbing on top of bridges that are super high up like that, but it was just really cool to learn a little bit about how he does it. And
yeah, who is this man?
I don't have the name offhand. He gave me his card. He works for... He works for New York State, D.C.
Okay.
And I forget the name offhand, but he does some pretty amazing work, and actually has some YouTube videos on the internet too of him banding the birds and him on top of the bridge going out to the nests, uh-huh. which is really cool. He was saying he's dive bombed a lot by the parents. The parents aren't happy when he's up there, but he has to band them, so because mm-hmm. they're a threatened species here in New York State. So a lot of the young are banded, and he says he's been hit a few times on his helmet by the adults.
Not only have to climb up all the way, but with the helmet on, seems a little tricky.
Yeah,
oh, that's crazy. And so these falcons, they're back in the same nesting spot this year.
Yes.
And you're following.
I've stopped in a couple times, yes. Not much recently because she's on, from what I'm assuming, she's on eggs right now. So it's pretty slow right now. The parent just, the adult male does all the hunting while she's on eggs. And the male will come in from time to time just to give her a break and stretch her wings and fly out of the nesting hole. But other than that, not much happens until the kids are born. That's when things get interesting because they have, like I said, they're very territorial. And once they have young to protect, anything that passes through, they'll kind of run them out of the area. But also they'll just be more, a little bit more action when the kids are born because there'll be more food deliveries and it'll just be a little more busy and not so much sitting around, so kind of just waiting until the eggs hatch, mm-hmm. which should be probably, I would say, the end, probably the middle of May, close the middle of May, maybe close a little bit closer to the end of May, and then and we just get to watch the kids grow, and they grow quick. So
I was going to ask if people can, like, buy your books, but since you mentioned it's really not the goal of this project, maybe, I guess they can follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, my Instagram is jazzphots, JASPHOTS, and I'm always posting wildlife up on there. I mean, if you are interested and you do follow my Instagram, you can message me about purchasing a copy of the book there. I don't really advertise them to be on sale. It was more of a personal project for me, and it was a little bit costly to get it printed because it is quite a few bit of pages. It was 6 months worth of photography with them, so it's a full-blown book. It's, you know, over 100 pages, which wasn't necessarily cheap to print, which is why I can't really be selling them for too cheap. But if you are interested in one, reach out to me and I can give you the details on how much they are and who it gets printed by and whatnot. They did a really good job, so I'm very pleased with how it came out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that's all the questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. Greatly appreciate it, and happy Earth Day to everyone. Today's Earth Day, so if you get a chance, get out there and enjoy some of the wildlife out there today. And as always, respect it and just respect our planet in general because it's here for both us and the wildlife. So happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. I thought it was yesterday.
Okay.
Wasn't it? Well, thank you.
All right.
Peregrine Falcon.
That recordings of Peregrine Falcon were from Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs. You know, since I interviewed Julie Hart last month about New York Breeding Bird Atlas and the joy of taking time to really get to know birds around us instead of you know, just checking boxes and growing numbers of your sightings lists and accomplishing goals and all that kind of way. Instead, I really wanted to keep going with the theme of slowing down and truly appreciate the amazing diversity around us and hear stories from people who practice such observations. So huge thanks to Justin Schmidt, my guest for today's show, and I highly recommend checking out Justin's photos on his Instagram account if you're on the platform. Again, it's at JASPHOTS. And you can listen to my past interviews on this show, Bequency, at bequency.tumblr.com, or you can just search for Bequency WGXC and a bunch of things come up. Now it's time for us to listen to some bird-inspired music. And, you know, I feel like somehow it's almost cliche to have, like, acoustic, like, folky music for anything to do with nature when, like, people make videos and stuff. And, I mean, please don't get me wrong. I like those stuff myself, and I play a lot of them on this very show, too. But I just feel it doesn't always have to be that way. There's just so many artists in many different genre who were inspired by birds. So I wanted to play some electronic music type of thing that's inspired by birds today. And we'll start with a track that's a pretty famous one. It's called Pacific State by 808 State, released in 1989. It's a famous one for the use of sampling a recording of a loon. So stay tuned for 808 State. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency on WGXC. We just heard a track titled Learning the Birds by artist name is Changes to Blind, who was originally from Syracuse, New York, now based in North Carolina. And the track was from an album titled Volume 8, Before Birth to Expiration, which just came out this year, a couple of months ago. And preceding that was Pacific State by British electronic music group 808 State. And before moving on to more music, I'd like to introduce some of the upcoming bird walks happening around here in the Hudson Valley. In Columbia County, which is my home turf, Alan DeVoe Bird Club is my gang, and we have bird walks, one happening on May 18th, which is Saturday, at Olana in Hudson, and May 25th, also Saturday, at Drowned Land Swamp in Ancrumdale. You can find the meetup time and exact location at our website, www.alandevobirdclub.org. You can also, I think, search Alan DeVoe Bird Club. And Columbia Land Conservancy is also hosting a bird walk. This one is also at Drowned Land Swamp, but this is happening on May 10th, which is Friday, Spring Migration Bird Walk. You can find more information at columbialand.org. Ulster County, they have bird walks hosted by John Burroughs Natural History Society Monday, May 6th at High Banks, which is a scenic Hudson property apparently in the town of Esopus. Wednesday, May 8th around New Paltz, and Thursday, May 9th at John Burroughs Nature Sanctuary in Highland. You can find the meetup time and exact location at their website, jbnhs.org. jbnhs.org. Dutchess County, there are tons of field trips hosted by Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club. Wednesday, May 1st in Beacon. Saturday, May 4th in Bashak Hill. Wednesday, May 8th in Ferncliff Forest. Wednesday, May 15th, Peach Hill in town, Poughkeepsie Park. Sunday, May 19th, Doodle Town. Wednesday, May 22nd, Nuclear Lake. Wednesday, May 29th, Tamarack Preserve. You can find more information at their website at watermanbirdclub.org. Waterman Bird Club, one word. watermanbirdclub.org. For Greene County, I got some information of the bird walks led by Larry Fetterman, whom I interviewed on this radio show, Bequency, last year. He has a spring birding series at Ramshorn Livingston Audubon Sanctuary in Catskill. I participated this last year and it was amazing. This series of walks already started on Friday, April 19th, and the series will run through each Friday through May 31st. April 28th. Oh, sorry, that's already passed. No, that's actually tomorrow, so I should mention. April 28th, bird walk at the Mawignak Preserve for the Greenland Trust. May 25th, BioBlitz at the Mountaintop Arboretum, Tannersville. That word is really hard for me to pronounce. Anyhow, for more information and or to subscribe to Larry's mailing list, you can contact him at birderlarry@verizon.net. Birderlarry, that's one word, @verizon.net to receive information on his upcoming bird walks and talks. And I've been speaking over this local bird field recording made by Christopher Funkhauser, who is a writer, musician, and host of Poet Radio here on WGXC, which airs fourth Thursdays of the month at 7 p.m. And so, why not join one of these walks that's probably happening near you? Okay, let's listen to more bird-inspired music of the month. Gonna keep on going with some electronic music type of thing that's bird-inspired. Stay tuned for An Ark of Doves, a track by Harold Budd and Brian Eno. This is Frequency on WGXC. Thanks for listening.